Liberty in our lifetimes in a free state of our own. That's the vision. That's the dream. We are building it in New Hampshire. I'm Eric Brakey, your host and renegade statesman for the Porcupine Report. Welcome to your source for porcupine news and free-range conversation on matters of liberty. All right, let's hop into the show. Hello there, everyone. Eric Brakey here, your host, your renegade statesman, executive director of the Free State Project. So much thank you for joining us this evening. We're going to have a great show with a great guest. This is episode 15 of the Porcupine Report. Glad to have you here. All right. Before we launch into the show, I got to tell you, just like I always do, tickets are on sale right now for the Porcupine Freedom Festival, also known as Pork Fest. This is taking place this June 17th through the 23rd at Rogers Campground in beautiful Lancaster, New Hampshire. I'll tell you, I was just there the other day checking out the sites, checking out the campgrounds, making sure everything is in order. And boy, I was taken in by the sight of those beautiful mountains, the beautiful scenery of Rogers Campgrounds. It's a beautiful place. And there's going to be so many beautiful people there, exciting people, libertarian, liberty-loving people. Over 2,000 of your favorite libertarians are going to be camping there with us at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. And you don't want to miss out. We're going to be joined by Spike Cohen, Jack Hunter, Gene Epstein, Jeffrey Tucker, James Bovard, David Friedman, and so many more. Ron Paul is going to be zooming in on a massive telescreen to talk with us and take questions from us. Won't be there physically, but all the other people I just listed will be there physically in person, including our guest for this evening, the one, the only, Carla Garrick. I'll be bringing her on in just a moment. But Pork Fest is not to be missed. Bring your friends, bring your family, and reserve your campsites while supplies last. Grab your tickets at porkfest.com. That's pork with a C, not with a K. Before they sell out. And the early bird tickets, I'm sorry to tell you, are sold out. You're not an early bird anymore. You're getting to be a late bird, right? But there's so much demand for folks coming to Porkfest, you want to grab your ticket while the tickets last because they do sell out. All right, porkfest.com. That's the promotion, everyone. Now on to the rest of the show. As I mentioned, our guest for this evening is someone who's become a good friend of mine, a colleague who I'm working with at the Free State Project, someone who's blazed a trail, has her own very interesting story in the liberty movement in her own right, and has been fighting for building the Free State of New Hampshire for quite some time now. Her name is Carla Garrick. She is the president emeritus of the Free State Project and the chairman of the board. Carla, welcome to the Porcupine Report.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to join you and congratulations on 15 episodes. That's amazing.
Yeah, we've been doing this 15 weeks now. Time just keeps flying by.
And you've had some amazing guests. You had Glenn Jacobs on who came to speak right before Liberty Forum, which of course usually takes place in the winter. So as people get excited about Pork Fest, they should remember we also have this winter event and to look out for that. And while I'm at it, you know, we'll have some crypto events in the fall. So I guess my point to lead with is there's always something happening in the Free State. And if you're a libertarian who hasn't visited, shame on you. Make sure you do that. And everyone should get their Pork Fest tickets because Pork Fest is amazing and I cannot wait.
You know, I think that's one of the most amazing things, I've observed and since I began this process of moving over to New Hampshire, which I haven't moved just yet, but I'm now done with the Senate. I'm in process. I know everyone's looking forward to me, you know, getting over there permanently. I've been to kind of involved with the liberty movement across the country for over going on 12 years now. And in Maine and in many other states where I've been active, you know, there are, you're lucky if there's like a liberty event and a gathering, like maybe a once a month meetup, you know, somewhere in the state and people gather together and, have a few beers and talk about Murray Rothbard or Ayn Rand or whatever they want to talk about. I guess Bitcoin, or they argue about different cryptocurrencies, what have you.
Talk about what cool name they're going to give their dog that aligns with their values, of course, because that seems to be a contest these days, too.
I know that's happened in New Hampshire between Murray Rothbard and Ron Paw and a lot of cleverly named canines in the free state. But I guess the difference is, right, in New Hampshire, in the free state, there's literally an event taking place every single day. And it's not just people getting together to talk about Murray Rothbard. It's people like just libertarians going rucking together, or having a game night, or doing things that are even can be much more important, building entire like homeschooling networks so that you can educate your children with a network of people who share your values without reliance on the state. It's the ecosystem of liberty in New Hampshire has really taken me back since I've been getting on.
I mean, that's great to hear. I moved in 2008, so I've been here a long time. I'm going on my 16th year. And, you know, when we came, it was slim on the ground. There were maybe 100 people. Everyone would drive for one event. And now we're actually spoiled in the sense that there are so many liberty lovers who have come here. And of course, people we've also awakened on the ground who align with our values. So to me, the Free State Project has almost become liberty as a lifestyle, right? So it's not just your political views or, you know, oh, I'm a libertarian and I'm alone. It's sort of, as to your point, it's how do I live my life here in New Hampshire doing the things that matter to me? So, you know, you can literally homeschool your children, have some chickens, meet your friends for a crypto meetup, the longest consecutive crypto meetup in the world, going on almost 20 years. And then there are like the standard things that people would find on the calendar, which of course anyone can find at fsp.org/calendar. People can take a look there. We do make an effort to try and keep it up to date because visitors come all the time and they want to come meet new people. So they can take a look there. There's everything from poker nights to, you know, I do a meetup at the Courier once in a while, which is the big art museum here in Manchester. So there really is that flavor. You know, friends go down to Boston for theater. Some people like ice skating. Some people, you know, so it really is beyond the let's sit in a basement and argue the finer minutiae of things. It is both how do you want to live your life, and also what can we practically implement here? And I think it's really important for people to understand this isn't pie in the sky. What we are doing in New Hampshire is the proof of concepts there. New Hampshire now consistently ranks either number one or number two on all metrics. There was a U.S. News survey that came out yesterday, and New Hampshire was ranked number two overall, behind only Utah. And I thought it was really interesting. Here's some little statistics for people who care about that kind of stuff. New Hampshire's GDP is $111 billion. And I have to tell you, I kind of like that it was 111 because that speaks to my individualistic side. 50% of people in New Hampshire are college educated. That probably does factor in when we look at things like first in the nation, right? New Hampshire is the place that they have the first primary where people come and they sort of compete. You know, we get a lot of attention every 4 years during the presidential race. That is reducing as we see this sort of, nationalization, federalization of the electoral system happening, right? One man, one vote. I know up in Maine, you guys, I believe, just passed that, right?
Yeah. Well, over my strong objections, they're pushing us into this national popular vote compact.
Right. And then here in New Hampshire, median income is about $50,000. So it's well above the national average. That is median. So that also means, you know, there are a lot of other people playing in different economic brackets. And then the population is only 1.4 million, which, you know, I actually saw that number this morning and I was like, oh, that's gone up 200,000 since I moved to New Hampshire 15, 16 years ago. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, because we're going to hope those 200,000 are pro-liberty folks, and maybe they are, but there's probably also the likelihood that some of that is, you know, people who want to come and change the nature and ethos of New Hampshire. And it's very important for people to understand, we Granite Staters take live free or die quite seriously. It is not just a slogan on a license plate. It is a way that people up here think. People are very ruggedly individualistic, and we're very live and let live. And that note's important too, because I do see a little rising note amongst some libertarians that are becoming strangely authoritarian, where they're like, we're going to use the government to enforce our selected policies, the things we like. Like, if we don't like these groups, now we're going to do this. And we have to be careful of that. I think at its very nature, libertarians do embrace live and let live, very much mind your own business. And certainly that's sort of the flavor of it that I find on the ground here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, everyone is always tempted the moment you get a little piece of that ring of power is, we got to remember we're throwing it in Mount Doom. We're not taking it to Gondor. We're not imagining we can use the government power to reshape, you know, civilization how we want, unless we're using it to fight the federal government. I'm all for using state power to fight national power. But I do want to get into something you said earlier. You know, I think certainly when I have kind of traveled the country and kind of seen different states, I hear a lot of anxiety about, oh, people are coming in from out of state and they're going to change what the state is about. Well, I was down in Texas for a year and a half, and I heard this all the time. This was during the COVID era in particular. Oh, people from California are coming here and they're going to bring their California values and they're going to change what Texas is all about, and we're going to turn into California. But what is actually interesting, when you looked into the numbers and you looked into polling of people who were moving to Texas were in fact more conservative than Texas itself. They were coming because of the projection, the reputation, the branding of Texas. And they said, that's where I want to be. I want to leave this California statism behind, and I want to go somewhere where they have freedom. Now, I don't think that Texas necessarily lives up to that reputation and that brand. I mean, after all, they only just recently got constitutional carry, while states right. like New Hampshire and Maine were leading on it for, over a half a decade before them. But I do think that it is a charge for us in New Hampshire, right? Is one of the good things going for New Hampshire as far as kind of the future for it being a liberty state is not just the fact that we have the excellent Free State Project here kind of helping to bring libertarians to the state, but also that New Hampshire has managed to maintain that brand, that we haven't become just seen as another New England bastion of progressivism like Massachusetts and sadly like Maine is trending, and Vermont certainly is, with Bernie Sanders as their mascot and avatar for socialism. So
right, and maybe, you know, part of that is there is a balance that needs to be maintained between live and let live, and just, you know, you got to keep an eye on stuff as well. And I get a sense, at least in Maine, you know, it's almost like people became very complacent, right? And the thing about politics, you know, you talk about the ring, and I've kind of changed my thinking a little bit, I think, in terms of what I think the government represents, because, you know, people will say, especially libertarians, will talk about the lesser of the two evils and don't vote for the lesser of the two evils is kind of how the LP will present, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats. And then somehow, I don't know, magically in our minds, all the LP candidates are 100% pure, which of course is a fallacy. And so, you know, if you actually look at it objectively, they're all the lesser of the two evils, maybe the lesser of the three evils, the four evils, whatever the pool is. But I think by its very nature, government is rotten to the core. It will always end up being corrupt. It's its nature. It's the system. It is the man, right? And so I think we need to think more strategically, which I feel like the LP is actually starting to do for the first time.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because, of course, at the big news of the last week was that at the Libertarian Party National Convention upcoming at the end of this month, that they invited Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to come speak at the convention. Of course, they're also running their own nominating process, and they're going to be putting forward their own candidate for president. And what was a shock to many is that Donald Trump actually accepted the invitation. And well, here, I want to read the statement that Donald Trump's campaign put out. Quote, libertarians are some of the most independent and thoughtful thinkers in our country, and I'm honored to join them in Washington, D.C. later this month. We must all work together to help advance freedom and liberty for every American, and a second Trump administration will achieve that goal. If libertarians join me in the Republican Party, where we have many libertarian views, the election won't even be close. Well, first of all, Carla, let me ask you, hearing that statement, do you buy it?
That we are a voting bloc that now needs to be courted in order for people to succeed, therefore saying that we have leveraged and leveled up as a party, as a philosophy, as something people want to talk about. Yes, I agree with Trump on that. You know, I think he's a smart operator. I think he does know that he got libertarian support in 2020. I mean, I just look at my own path in 2016, I voted for the LP candidate. In 2020, I was like, I think I'm going to go for Trump, right? And, you know, and Trump to me is just, he's the ultimate American. It's like the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? There's good stuff, there's bad stuff, and there's ugly stuff. But I think you could probably say that about every single candidate. So I think Trump is playing a clever game. I think he actually understands that RFK is a threat. I think both sides are not sure what is going on with this election. I think everyone understands Biden is just, you know, a placeholder perhaps at this stage for something else, whether that's going to be Newsom or, you know, Harris or what that's going to look like. But I mean, I think anyone who is saying that Joe Biden has the mental capacity to be president of the United States is both lying to themselves, but also genuinely lying to the entire world who can see for themselves what is going on. And so that is such an interesting dynamic too, right? Because it's the perception versus the reality. They're telling us one thing and everyone could see with their own eyes that that is not the truth.
Yeah.
So Biden's kind of out. I mean, cool if he shows up at the LP convention, but I think having Trump come, and then, of course, and this will probably be your next point, RFK saw the same opportunity and he was like, oh, maybe you should debate me at the LP convention. And this all seems like very, very clever politics to me. Politics is a game, and LP people need to understand we can spread the message of libertarianism and talk about the issues if we choose to, or we can get in our own way and play this purist game that literally gets nowhere. So what I would love to see is for people to take this opportunity to talk about the things that matter to libertarians. What is that? Sound money. So things like ending the Fed. Can we get Trump and RFK on record to end the Fed? Can we get them on record for a solution to these wars everyone is so eager to do? We've got to find out what is going to happen with CBDCs, right? Like, we cannot usher this in. It is going to be really bad for everyone. We have to look at education. So I'm like, look, let's take this opportunity and let's talk about substantive issues, not things like what is a woman and who should vote or, you know, whatever. Let's talk about substantive things that we care about and let's make that the discussion for the 2024 election. Then libertarians are winning. And we are winning. We just have to stop thinking like losers.
You know, I remember a few years back when the litmus test, I think someone threw out in the presidential debates at the Libertarian Party National Convention was whether or not you believe that people should have to have a driver's license. All right. Well, hey, look, I know we're all kind of looking for a liberty purity test and all that. But there are kind of real matters of immediate importance, right? And immediate substance right now that libertarians have a voting bloc can use their leverage with major party candidates. I mean, I get people who, and again, we're just speaking on behalf of ourselves, not the organization. It's a 501c3. We don't endorse candidates, yada, yada, yada. So we're just giving our own personal opinions. But I will say, you know, a decade in politics, I do think it is valuable to look at your individual vote for an office like president or whatever it is. I mean, obviously, when you have the opportunity to vote for and elect a real liberty champion who has a chance to win, like, always go for that. But also look at how you can use your vote and the votes of the community as leverage to make practical gains on liberty policy, even if that means that people who aren't perfectly libertarian or even imperfectly libertarian get into those positions. You know, I always think back to something that Morton Blackwell said. He was the founder of the Leadership Institute, and he was at one point in time the youngest national delegate for Barry Goldwater. I think he still brags about that to this day. He's a much older man now. But he said, you know, there's two ways to try to get the change that you want in government. Is we can, one, we can get all the right people who believe all the right things. We could run them for office. We could get them to win and have a majority of all the right people doing all the right things because they know in their hearts that it's the right thing to do, right? Or understanding that that's a very impractical reality because the nature of government and politics is to attract people who want power, not freedom and liberty. The alternative is to shape the political environment around the wrong people to make it politically expedient for them to do the right thing, right? And so a figure like Donald Trump or a figure like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I think, you know, there's interesting aspects from a libertarian angle to each of them. But speaking specifically to Donald Trump, I think one of the more interesting things about him is just how influenceable he seems to be. Influenceable by the bad people, but also influenceable by some of the good people. And particularly, it was very I appreciated seeing during his first term that he was golfing with Rand Paul a lot. Yeah. And when it came to matters like war and peace, Rand Paul was able to be in his ear and I think averted an entire war with Iran that could have happened if Donald Trump had only allowed himself to be influenced by the John Boltons of the world, which I agree should never have been in his orbit in the first place. But, right. But I think it's a testament to the fact that you have RFK, the fact that you have Donald Trump Jr. coming to the Libertarian Party National Convention, making a play for that voting bloc. You know, our power as a separate voting bloc that are not loyal D's or not loyal R's, we vote principle, not party. Our power is being hard to get, not impossible to get. Because if all of these candidates just write us off and say you're never going to get any libertarian votes because they're just too purist, right? Then they're never going to try to come and appeal to us on our issues. They're going to write us off. But if we can set high standards and say we want a pardon of Ross Ulbricht and Julian Assange and Edward Snowden, we want an end of the war in Ukraine. We want, you know, we can have kind of very practical and achievable things that we can demand with the leverage that we have clearly have, because the presidential candidates are coming and knocking. And Carla, you took a lot of flack at Porkfest last year when you got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to come to Porkfest. So you have some experience with the controversy and the people being upset about who's speaking at what events. What are some of your reflections on that and how they apply to the situation today?
Yeah, and you know, I have to give a shout out to Dennis Pratt as well, who was the main organizer at Porkfest. He called me one day and he was like, hey, RFK, you know, I had said, look, I think it'd be really cool if we can get him there. I think this would create interesting dialogue. I'm curious about some of these positions. I have seen RFK actually change positions, including on 2A. So for everyone who has it in their head that he is anti-gun, that is not true. He is, to your point, Eric, come around with some things. So part of that soft power is if you can get the right ears, i.e. the right egos, because that's why they're in that role, you can bend policy if you can get to the people. So that is what I'm trying to do. So with RFK, I wanted him there. I come from a diplomatic background. My dad was a diplomat, and his favorite conspiracy theory, because I'm sure everyone has one, is JFK. So if I have to say what my entry, conspiracy theory in the history of the world was, it was the JFK assassination. So, I've been following that thread for a long time. And I think that there is enough questions there that enough people can understand to make it intriguing, to be like, Lou Rockwell once said, America's not going to heal until the truth about the JFK assassination comes out. So that's just a personal, like, little fascination with RFK and that whole world. So setting the scene, Dennis calls me, I'm at the community garden, I'm gardening, and he's like, hey, so I got him, he's willing to come, but he wants a gun-free zone. And my inclination was, why not? I think we should navigate this, he's our guest. It seems like a reasonable request, given that two of his direct family members have been assassinated. It's not something I personally, it's not my values, but let's be polite to this guy so that we can hear what he has to say. He was by far our most popular on-site speaker ever at Porkfest, so probably the right call. We had a lot of people come in. We had to turn people away. The people who are, very angry at me because of the gun-free zone had their own protest across the field, which is so libertarian and beautiful. And RFK came and he gave a extremely libertarian, pro-liberty, pro-freedom speech after being introduced by Jeffrey Tucker from the Brownstone Institute. The fact that he was there, the fact that we were actually willing to meet someone where they were at, because this is something we have to learn. You can't be like, no, do it my way or no way, right? Like sometimes you actually in life have to compromise in order to move forward. You have to pick your battles. But honestly, I think creating a gun-free zone with literally an entire zone of guns around the gun-free zone, it was such an artificial moment, right, in terms of real safety. So he came to Porkfest. We know for a fact, I know there were at least 4 mainstream media outlets there, and including the New York Times, who got booed because we called them out. There was no media coverage post-Porkfest about RFK's time at Porkfest. So that was an actual news embargo, which I found very interesting, right? So that would be one of my sort of questions with the LP play, right? Like, do we know it's going to get the sort of media attention, media coverage, the leverage? I mean, for me, it's like the reason to bring these people to talk there is so that at the end of that convention, thousands more, if not millions more, people know the word libertarian than they did before. And then the question is, if you're Googling libertarian, what is coming up, right? Like, what is the messaging? What is the thing that people are discovering as their first foray into this new way of thinking? And so RFK, I think, he's anti-establishment outlier. Trump is anti-establishment outlier. If I could wave my magic wand, I would love to see a Trump RFK or RFK Trump ticket. That would smash the uniparty. So if, I don't know, let's throw this out into the universe and see what happens. I don't think there's going to be an actual debate at the LP convention, but if there is, I mean, maybe, if they time it right, they could have the actual LP candidates debate and have whoever their pick is and then make a 3-way on the stage. That would actually legitimately give some flavor of libertarianism. But let's assume that can't happen. I mean, imagine if we could get RFK and Trump to flip a coin, and whatever it's decided, that's the order of the ticket. And that would destroy the establishment, that would destroy the Uniparty. That ticket would win and they would not know what to do. And then we just fill their cabinet with thinking libertarians. Done.
Well, Carla, if you could get them to agree to that, that would be quite a feat. I imagine there's a little bit more ego involved. In fact, I think I it's hard to know what's true exactly. But, you know, I hear rumors that Trump had asked RFK to be his running mate to kind of get him off the field and place. And RFK is going his own way. There's been so much politics with the VP. I know Tulsi Gabbard, who spoke at Liberty Forum, the New Hampshire Liberty Forum that we hosted. We were glad to have her. Rumor is that RFK asked her to be his VP and she declined, but she's, you know, interested in being Trump's VP. So there's a lot of VP games going around. And of course, with politics, there's a lot of egos, but ultimately, hopefully things sort themselves out and we get at least whatever happens, the ruling establishment doesn't get a pass to keep doing what they're doing. I will say, I do want to go back to one thing you were talking about earlier, and because I want to defend you on something, because I know how much flack you got on this so-called gun-free zone at Porkfest. Now, I wasn't an employee of the Free State Project at the time, but I was there at that Porkfest. I saw Robert F. Kennedy speaking. And, you know, I just want to say, to my mind, and I want to say this, I say this with the pen that signed constitutional carry in Maine into law in my hand. So I speak with, I think, a little bit of authority on Second Amendment issues. When we talk about gun-free zones, there's two kinds of gun-free zones, right? There is the stupid kind, the especially stupid kind, right? Where you put up a sign and you say, this is a gun-free zone, don't bring your firearms here, right? But there's no security. There's nothing stopping someone from walking in there with a firearm to do harm to others, and then everyone else being defenseless, right? That is the unarmed victim zone version of a gun-free zone.
Right.
What Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had set up, he brought security, right? It was a secured zone, right? It wasn't so you didn't have the same, I think, the safety concerns that come about in my mind with the absurdity and stupidity of so many of these gun-free zones. In fact, we call them both gun-free zones, but they're pretty two different things. One's an unarmed victim zone and one's a security zone.
And of course, I mean, there's also a very strong private property right issue. You know, whoever was shouting me down, I'm like, you sir, lady, have not rented the pavilion. The Free State Project has, and the management of the Free State Project gets to make the decisions about what happens to this private property. And if you don't want to be disarmed to come hear RFK speak, you're entirely entitled to go away. So the point is, right, like everyone wants to conflate things, but when you pull it back down to property rights, you know, I choose not to go to theaters that disarm me, let's say, or I choose not, thank God in New Hampshire, you're allowed to carry your firearm onto school while voting, by way of example, because we do take our Second Amendment rights seriously. But, you know, I just think, I mean, you know, it created a buzz. People had a conversation. I think all of that is always valuable and good. The other thing that I found quite fascinating, you know, I admire actually RFK for a lot of the things other libertarians don't like him for. I actually like that he goes after corporatism and the people who are poisoning our water and our environment and all of those things, because there is, you know, in libertarianism, you know, we have different avenues of different ways we want to fix things. And using the courts is a legitimate way. And if the state is protecting bad actors, corporatism, which they are, I'm looking at you, Monsanto, I'm looking at you, all the defense offense contractors, BAE, Lockheed, like all of it, right? Like we know that corporatism is probably close to, please let it be close to peak level, right? So someone like him, who's a lawyer, who is actually going after bad actors, should be admired. You can call him an eco-terrorist, and maybe some of his his green policies need a firmer libertarian property rights eye to it. But I'm very confident we can actually persuade him, because here's the other thing I think libertarians keep forgetting. We have good arguments. We have good solutions. We are correctly identifying the problems and saying these are the ways that you can mitigate them. So with RFK, what I found curious is we did not at any stage talk about vaccines. I did not cover anything to do with COVID mania. Now, I got a lot of flack back from the mothers and a lot of the people who were attending his talk to talk about vaccines. But at no stage during Porkfest was one word uttered about vaccines by RFK or any of the questions that were asked of RFK, because I asked those questions and I asked things that would help libertarians. Tell us more about like what your cabinet would look like. Would you hire libertarians? What's your position on CBDCs? Hey, what do you think about the wars? Would you murder us if we secede? He was very ambivalent about that one, right? But the point being, this like subtext note that's out there about the libertarians are anti-vaccine as a movement or something is the figment of people's imagination, because the facts do not actually support that. So you know, for people who are like kind of like, oh, I mean, I've literally heard things like the FSP is now anti-science, or, you know, like these nonsense positions that, you know, people are yelling. I'm like, guys, stop talking and just bumper stickers. Think for yourself, create the landscape, figure it out. You know what RFK is? He's a statesman. You know what Trump is? Is a playboy billionaire. I'm like, I would take my chances with these two clowns over the other clowns any day at this stage. Also, because I don't care what happens federally, because I am in the free state building something that is going to replace America. It's going to be America 2.0, and we're going to get it right this time.
I will say personally, having been to a number of these speeches at Porkfest in years past, I thought that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was much better received at Porkfest than the past Libertarian Party nominee for vice president was, Bill Weld. I remember being here for that and asking him. I asked him a basic question about like red flag laws, and I don't remember his answer exactly, but I seem to have walked away with the impression that he was for them. And he was the vice presidential candidate under the LP. So frankly, if the LP is big enough for Bill Weld to actually be the nominee for vice president, then I think it's big enough to invite candidates like Trump and RFK to make their pitch, to understanding they're not libertarians. They don't claim to be libertarians,
right?
But make their pitch to libertarian voters on why someone who loves liberty should be interested in what they have to offer. And I think what'll be interesting to see is if, I'm sure that Bobby Kennedy is kind of aware. He certainly tries to, I think, tailor his message to and speak to certain liberty parts of his platform when he's talking to libertarians. I wonder about Trump, though, as to what level of awareness he has where libertarians disagree with him, or if he's just going to come in and be like, well, everything I do is awesome, so let me just
tremendous. It's all tremendous. Tremendous,
let me,
Eric,
give you the same kind of MAGA speech he would give, you know, at the Republican National Convention, which I will be at, by the way. I will be a national delegate, so it'll be interesting to see kind of how his remarks.
Right, and of
differ.
Course, we do know that politicians tailor their message to the audience they're speaking to. I remember when Hillary Clinton got caught out with that, because there was a clip that came out where she said something to the Goldman Sachs investors, and she was pandering to taking care of the poor, you know, publicly. And people were like, oh, look at this clip side by side. Look at this hypocrite, which, what? Of course, is why they hate technology, because we can show those things.
I think in her case, though, she says you have a public position and you have a private position, right? She was talking about having different positions on the same issue, depending on the audience, versus emphasizing different parts of her overall platform, depending on the audience.
Right. And well, I was just going to point out that is, of course, the nature of politics. Like, I just feel like people should not be naive or stupid about what politics is. It is a, I mean, not to sound too Machiavellian, which I actually literally went and got the book out of my downstairs library this morning. But you know, Sun Tzu says, you know, the art of war, it's like you have to play the game in the arena according to the rules of that game, right? And so I think libertarians maybe finally are ready to play the game of politics. Now, I know this probably sounds annoying to people or unprincipled. I mean, I hold very firm on my principles. So I believe, you know, you can go in and stick to your principles. You're just probably not going to be super effective. You might know something about that up there in Maine, right? So we do want principled people in there. But the reality is, the only way the LP is ever going to win is if more people know about libertarianism. So when they announced Trump, whatever, like mid last week, I've been, you know, I have Google alerts on New Hampshire, libertarian, like all the Google alerts, right, in the different ways. And the Google alerts for libertarianism, because of just purely the Trump announcement, forget the RFK one, we got a big bump out of that too. So the data shows that we have already, just through this, spread the word, which then creates the entry point to start to talk about how we can implement these policies so that we can either right what is wrong or come up with other solutions. Now, again, I personally do not think we can right what is wrong with DC. I think the special interests and the amount of money and the corruption, it is unreformable. And do you know how I know? Because every time something starts to get fixed, they move the goalposts. They have literally made it impossible. I don't know who this they is, you decide for yourself, to talk about police accountability. Because of what happened with BLM and the woke narrative and the whatever. So every time over the past 20 years when we've talked about an issue that was a winning issue of something that actually needed to get reformed, like militarized police, like SWAT raids on people's houses, like doxing, whatever. Now no one can talk about it, right? So now every time we make inroads, some new special crazy interest comes up and then everyone's looking over here, trans rights, trans rights. So now you can't talk about whatever was pressing and important at some stage. It's the same they're doing with anti-war, with the wars. Now suddenly I see a lot of libertarians kind of picking sides and not talking about peace, not talking about non-interventionism, not talking about both sides. It's bad for both sides, not talking about treaties, not talking about peace. And I personally think that that is our winning libertarian position, yeah, particularly now where it seems more likely that people will be sent to war. You worked on Defend the Guard up in Maine. I worked on it down here. We passed it in the House in New Hampshire. I think you passed it up there, right?
No, well, no, we got it in the Republican platform and we got it in the main house to vote for it. Not enough.
How many? Sorry.
About a third of the main house. For the first roll call vote it's had in the legislature in Maine in 10 years, the first time 10 years ago, it got 7 votes. So this was a remarkable improvement.
Good job. No, and see, those are actually success stories. Like, The incrementalism part is real, right? So one of my core issues, not Free State Project related, is independence, right? And so let's say last time 13 people voted for it, and this time 26 people voted for it. That is a success story, right? So if you had 7 guys the first time and a third the next time, it took 10 years. Everything takes way too long in politics. It is mired in a mess. But for the folks who are like, I get it. I'm not actually going to change DC. So let's look at it like a circus and let's make it as entertaining as we humanly can for our own edification. And let's make New Hampshire the best destination for liberty lovers and libertarians from across the world. But you know what? There are millions of American libertarians, and we would just happily accept 10% of you.
Yes. And you know what, Carla? You're absolutely right. DC is so broken. It's not going to be fixed from the inside. The best we can hope for is a few good men and women who go there and be the voices calling out the absurdity and putting throwing monkey wrenches in the agendas of the corrupt establishment every opportunity they can. Whether that's our real kind of great liberty champions like Rand Paul and Thomas Massie, whether it's a few people who occasionally are, you know, have some liberty sympathies on certain things, but love to throw the monkey wrenches in, like the Matt Gaetzes of the world. Sometimes even the Donald Trumps. Well, you know. All right, we're getting further and further away from real kind of liberty. But the more they're fighting about implementing kind of the establishment agenda, the better, I think, from our perspective. And then from the bottom up, through the laboratories of innovation, the states that compose the union, we can change Washington, D.C. from the outside by cutting off support for them, by nullifying unconstitutional federal laws, by fighting back against kind of their ability to just steal our wealth and boss us around. We can do that through the state legislatures. And that's why it's so exciting to me. One of the reasons it's so exciting to me, what we're doing with the Free State Project in New Hampshire, seeing how many libertarians have actually gotten elected, for the most part under the Republican banner, but gotten elected to the state legislature and are leading on policy changes like school choice and defend the guard and cutting taxes and nullifying gun control. It's so encouraging. And this is the way. So people can come be a part of it. They can come visit us in New Hampshire and maybe even come for a week, stay for a lifetime.
I love it. Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about those successes, right? So New Hampshire is constantly expanding liberties, right? So we already have, we're a very low tax state, no sales tax, no income tax, but we're going to also be dividends and interest free next year, right? So we've tapered that down. Those were bills that actually passed. You know, the EFAs, so the education freedom accounts, those, we've had them for over 10 years. I believe we were the first state that introduced that. It is a robust program here that really supports parents who want to have control over their kids' educations themselves. There is a bill that is being sent to the Senate. I think it will pass. That is raising the poverty levels on that from 350% to 500%. So we're making the pool of children who can get access to these programs much larger. So if you're a parent and you're thinking about homeschooling, unschooling, maybe charter schooling, I mean, we have Free State, or I think there are two or three, maybe even four Free State schools now across the state. That is appealing, you know, to come here for that. You know, voter ID stuff has been tweaked a little bit, including saying you can't just submit an affidavit. There's, you know, you actually need like some issued piece of government papers, right? But the margin here in New Hampshire has been very narrow. And so for folks who are watching this is my personal plea, again, not wearing FSP hat. But if you've been in the state for 2 years and you're a Free Stater, here is what I'm asking. If you can run for office, genuinely out, open, proud, our ideas are good, we shouldn't be ashamed, let's get out there. If you've been here for 2 years and you're not quite ready to do that, or you just want to be on the DL, or you're not quite sure, primary your Democrat in your town, just for the hell of it. Everyone, if you live in a district where your senator voted against Defend the Guard, every single one of those guys is going to get primaried. And I did notice, by the way, that Jeb Bradley, the head of the Senate in New Hampshire, will not be running again. It's interesting because Bill Marsh, who switched from Republican to Democrat because he hates Free Staters, is going to run in that district. So we're going to have to be a little creative there. But my point being, New Hampshire is the end game if you're pro-liberty and you actually want to do something in your life that is purpose-driven, that has human action, and that is actually going to make a difference, as opposed to spinning your wheels, feeling important, wasting a lot of money, and getting nothing done. If you want to get shit done, New Hampshire is the place.
And there are so there's such a great network and community of people who will help you get shit done. So
exactly. Yes, there are thousands of us and we want people to come. We want them to settle in. And the best way to do that is to come visit, whether people come, you know, to Porkfest, which is coming up. Of course, you mentioned porkfest.com. Get your tickets. There'll be there'll be a big crypto thing in the fall and we'll do some programming around that. There's Liberty Forum next year. But also just come and let us know. Let our moving director, Chris Lopez, know that you're coming and we will try and, you know, network, set things up, do things that you're interested in. We know people who visit actually decide to move, and personally wearing my porcupine real estate hat, if you're moving, I'd love to sell you a house. So there you have it.
All right. Carla, I'm going to give you the last word, then we're going to close up. I'm going to do a final promo for Porkfest, or maybe you can help me with the final promo for Porkfest. I was telling people earlier, June 17th through the 23rd, Rogers Campground, all the great guests we're going to have. Carla's going to be there. I'm going to be there, and a lot of other great libertarians in between. People can get their tickets at porkfest.com. That's pork with a C, not a K, just like your humble host. You spell my name with a K, you're going to get it wrong. You spell Porkfest with a K, you're going to end up at some other festival. So
some barbecue festival.
Some barbecue festival might be delicious. But I'll tell you what, the vendors we have at Porkfest, at the Porcupine Freedom Festival, you're going to get better food than any barbecue festival you could ever go to. So I don't even know who the operators are of this hypothetical barbecue festival that probably doesn't even exist, but shame on them for trying to compete with us.
There's also, of course, Porch Fest, but let's not confuse everyone. Porkfest, PORCFEST.com. You can get your tickets for that. Folks who want to get involved with the Free State Project, go to FSP.org and sign up for the newsletter. Eric's writing an amazing newsletter. It's a great way to get a sense of what's happening in the state, sort of really get that taste for liberty as a lifestyle. And we'll create opportunities for folks to know what's coming up, what's happening, and all of that. For people who want to connect with me, please follow me on all the social. I do my art on my Insta. I do my bitchiness on Twitter. I try and do nice lifestyle stuff on Facebook, but find me on one of those. Everything's under my name, Carla Garrick. And come visit, come to Porkfest and come say hi. I will be doing a speech at Porkfest called Emancipate Yourself from Mental Slavery. I want to help people as I go on this wellness, well-being path. Really help inspire people to get them away from this manufactured fear paradigm that the state is instilling on us with billions, if not trillions of dollars of, you know, manufactured propaganda. So I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, who controls your mind and what you can do to actually be as robustly aware and conscious of who's trying to steal your attention. So I'll be focusing on that at Porkfest and doing some talks at some of the hubs and generally, you know, having a good time and hoping to meet all the new people who are going to come in this next wave of awesome activists and awesome people moving like Eric himself.
All right, Carla, that was the last word. Thank you so much for being on episode 15 of the Porcupine Report with us. And of course, I don't know, we talk all the time. So I guess next time I talk with you, we won't be, you know, we'll have a conversation just like this, but no one else will be able to hear it. So anyway,
thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Carla. All right, everyone. That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to thank our technical producer. I mentioned in last week's show, a big thank you to our past tech producer, Justin O'Donnell, who for 14 episodes helped us get this show up and going and operating and in a good spot. And he is going off to pursue other professional opportunities. We wish him all the best. Good on him. But I want to thank this evening our new technical producer for the show, Renita, who has stepped up and is working with everything behind the scenes to make this show look fabulous. So, Renita, thank you so much. One last reminder, everyone, say it with me now, porkfest.com. Get your tickets. I want to see you there. We're going to have a great 21st Pork Fest. And if you're not there, you're going to be missing out. And why would you want to do that? Don't miss out. Come be free. Come visit for a week and then maybe stay for a lifetime in the beautiful state of New Hampshire. All right, everyone. Furthermore, my opinion is the Federal Reserve should be destroyed.